The following program is being brought to you on the Voice America Variety Channel. For more information about our network and to check our additional show hosts and topics of interest, please visit voiceamericavariety.com. The Voice America Talk Radio Network is the worldwide leader in live internet talk radio. Visit voiceamerica.com. The views and ideas expressed on the following program are strictly those of the host or guests and do not necessarily reflect the views and ideas held by the Voice America Talk Radio Network, its staff, and management.
Everything starts with a design. Art, fashion, architecture, just about everything. Wouldn't you like to know more about what inspired the designer and why they designed something as they did? Welcome to Dishing the Dirt on Design with hosts Ann Asher and Eleanor Schrader Schapa. We'll speak to some of the most renowned names in the field of design, along with Ann and Eleanor's comments and flair. Let's get started. Here's Ann and Eleanor.
Welcome to our show, Dishing the Dirt on Design. I'm Ann Asher.
And I'm Eleanor Schrader Schapa. Thank you for joining us today. We are so pleased to present our guest, Bert Keeter, fashion designer extraordinaire and a Project Runway favorite. Bert's day and evening looks embody the principle established by the American design icon Halston, less is more. Bert not only designed for Halston, but also for three other top American designers, Holly Harp, Bill Blass, and Arnold Scassi. Bert, welcome so much, and thank you for coming to our show. Could you tell us a little bit about how you came into the field of fashion design and where you studied and where your travels have taken you?
Certainly. Well, thank you so much for having me on your show.
Sure. And
I'm really excited to be here. I was born and raised in Northern Virginia. My mother was from London, England. My father was American. And I think I got some interest from my mother and my grandparents, their history of being a European type of person, family. It was in my last year of high school that my art teacher, I was always very fond of art and drawing and anything artistic I loved. And she suggested, one day she saw me doing doodles, literally on just scraps of paper, and she said if I ever thought about going into fashion design, and I really hadn't, but it sort of put that spark in my mind for that.
Yes.
And later, that was my senior year. I took a year off from before going to applying for college, and I applied to two schools. One was University of Richmond, and the other was Parsons School of Design in New York City. And I remember very clearly my mother calling me. I was sitting on the edge of my bed, and she said, well, Bert, looks like you've been accepted to both schools, and Parsons and University of Richmond. Which one do you want to go to? And I thought for like a nanosecond, and I thought, okay, do I want to spend 4 years in Richmond or 4 years in New York City? And it was an easy answer, and I said, let's go to Parsons, and I did.
And how did you find your experience at Parsons?
Parsons was an absolute perfect fit for me. It's a small school. At that time, the fashion department was in Greenwich Village on 5th Avenue and 12th Street. This being the early 70s, New York was really an amazing town, a city to live in. I loved the school. I loved what they taught. It was an excellent fit for me. They really focused on high fashion, really more more so than like an FIT or Pratt would have. It was a great experience.
And how long did you stay in New York after you finished school?
I left actually just before graduation. I moved. I was anxious to move on to California, and I actually drove across country before graduation had even taken place. So I left New York in 1977. Moved to Los Angeles.
And then you moved back to New York for a while?
I moved back several times. When I moved to California, it was just sort of a whim. Fell in love with California, and trying to find a job, I thought, okay, what can I do in California that's high fashion? And I had seen Holly Harp at the Cody Awards, which is like the Oscars for Cody for fashion in America. And someone said, well, why don't you go see her, see if she's looking for an assistant. And I went and interviewed with her, and she was very flattered to have me there. But she said, you know, I've never had an assistant. I've always done all the designing myself. So I went home a little dejected, and my friend said, why don't you tell her that you would be willing to work for her for free till she sees if you'd be interested in having her as your full-time design assistant. So I went back. I offered her. She said, great. I worked for her for a few weeks. All she did was buy me lunch every day. And after a month or so, she said, Bert, let's stop this fooling around. Why don't you come work for me full time, which I did. And it was a great experience. I was with her for about 2 years. Then I actually one day I got a telegram that shows you how long ago it was from Bill Blass in New York, who I'd met briefly. And he offered me a job to design a division that he was starting and also to work on his couture collection with him directly. So that was a great opportunity, and that's when I moved back to New York.
Oh, that's wonderful. Now, we're going to be asking you a little bit more about your work with Blass and Halston and others. For now, tell me a little bit more about where you have traveled, perhaps to Europe, and how what you've seen there has influenced your designs.
Certainly. Well, I look at everything. I never take anything for granted in Los Angeles. Wherever I am, I'm always looking, and it could be one of my favorite designs that I had did for spring 2012 was a one-shoulder dress with like an armband on one sleeve. And I actually got that inspiration. I was driving down Sunset Boulevard one night, and this young girl was coming out of a club, and I think she'd had a bit too much to drink, and one of the sleeves of her T-shirt had been pulled off and sort of pulled down over her shoulder and was sort of bunched up. And I just saw that look of that one sleeve with the asymmetric sleeve neckline and then this little tiny, like, little band on her arm just pulled over. And I thought, that looks great. And it stayed in my mind for quite a while. So I made that design. But regarding Europe, I love history. I love previous the history of the world is I've always found fascinating, especially European history. I've traveled for Halston. When I worked at Halston, we'd go to Europe twice a year and to the Orient about four times a year. So we would start in Paris, fly to Milan or Florence or Rome. Then we'd go to London. It was about a 2 or 3 week trip. And then I started going to Europe by myself on vacations. And again, I go just to explore and to really breathe in the whole culture over there, which I love so much.
Bert, I'd love to ask you some things about Europe. It's such a fascinating place. And when we as Americans go there, we look at the history, we look at the beautiful buildings, the architecture, all the things. We taste the wonderful food. All that. And we get inspirations. I know I, as an interior designer, get that. What is one thing that you can think of that you saw in Europe that really gave you an idea of something you followed through with the design?
I think the one thing I'm impressed the most about is their lifestyle. I think, you know, what you mentioned earlier, less is more, which was Halston's motto. Europeans seem to live a wonderful life with less things to encumber them.
Yes.
They will buy very beautiful, good quality, and at all different economic levels. They'll buy three or four or five or six things a season that are all good quality. They're stylish. They're you know, perfect for their lifestyle. They don't encumber themselves with so much things,
right.
You know, objects. They're going to buy a beautiful jacket, a beautiful couple of sweaters, a few pullovers, shirts, blouses, pants. And
they must have a pretty good budget because that few adds up to a lot of money.
Well, compared to what they do in America. You know, Americans, I think shopping in America is like physical. It's like going to a psychiatrist. It's more about physical, mental therapy than it is about what I actually need to wear today or this season. So I think that's one thing. Just their whole lifestyle, they seem more in tune with their senses and the world around them, not rushing around so much. And it's a different climate, too. I mean, it does get very cold over there, so you have to adjust accordingly to that. I just like the whole the vibe of the Italian. I would stay in Venice, and I remember sitting in a square one morning on the island of Murano and watching very early. The stores weren't open, and watching the grandmothers come out with their children in prams, and then the mother going off kissing the grandmother and the baby, and the father going off, and the whole city. It was almost like an opera, watching the town come to life. And I just admire that. Being in touch with the moment, yes, and not rushing forward to something, you know, 6 months from now when they get 2 weeks off for a vacation.
Yes.
Bert, I just wanted to follow up on something going back to Europe. One of the things that I remember when I went to Europe and I was about 19 years old, and this was a long time ago that I was 19 years old, and I would sit in a little cafe, like you, watch the people go by, and I'll never forget my feelings about Paris. I would look at the young girls who were going by. I don't mean little girls. I mean young women girls, older teenagers to young women. And they were dressed in a very simple, maybe black skirt and a white blouse or sweater or something, but they all had on a gorgeous scarf. And they carried a pretty handsome-looking bag. They had so much of a sense of style. Do you still see that in the European women, that they have so much of a sense of style versus how the American women look in the way they put themselves together?
I think so. I mean, I think it has changed. I remember going to New York to Europe in the 70s, and it has become more global, I guess, their fashion. But I, like you said about that scarf, I mean, that scarf is probably such a major, or their scarf is such a major part of changing their basic wardrobe and making it work for the moment or for the season, not just tossing everything out and starting over when it turns into another season. But I do think there is a style over there. There's a confidence. I think also that their family units are more cohesive, so they the daughter might be influenced by her mother or by the culture and her community. Where here we're so like tuned into media and to what's happening in Hollywood, like that has anything to do with most people's lives. And I think they're just more comfortable with dressing almost down in a way. They're not as showy as some yes. other cultures are. They're really more about just not being, you know, look at me, just sort of being understated and quiet and very...
And handsome. Timeless. Handsome.
Yeah, handsome and timeless, yes.
And elegant.
And Bert, this is why we love your design so much. It's time to take a break. We'll be back with Bert Keeter from Season 9 of Project Runway.
What's going on behind the scenes with your favorite Voice America show or host? For the latest news, visit the iRadio blog at iradioblog.com.
What would you do if you knew that you could not fail? The Dr. Pat Show with Dr. Pat Basile is a radio forum for some of the world's most influential people in the fields of health, wellness, and human potential. Dr. Pat brings together and introduces visionary scientists and futurists, environmentalists, educators, business leaders, inventors, filmmakers, authors, artists, mystics, and healers who inspire and support individual and collective growth and positive cultural shifts. This award-winning radio show empowers the listening community to be the change they want to see in the world. Tune in every Thursday at 8 a.m. Pacific for the Dr. Pat Show with Dr. Pat Basile, radio to thrive by.
Technology is changing the way we live our lives and how we do business. On CIO Talk Radio, we talk about the benefits of technology and the great things it allows us to do, as well as its risks. Heard every Wednesday at 9 a.m. Central, 7 a.m. Pacific, Sunjoy Gall interviews business leaders and other experts that are shaping the way we use technology. To learn more about the show, visit www.ciotalkradio.com. Keep up with the changing world of technology and listen to CIO Talk Radio with Sunjoy Gall. Listen in every Wednesday at 9 a.m. Central, 7 a.m. Pacific, right here on Voice America Business.
Streaming live, the leader in Internet Talk Radio, VoiceAmerica.com.
You are tuned in to Dishing the Dirt on Design with Ann Asher and Eleanor Schrader Schapa. For more information about our program, please visit dishingthedirtondesign.com.
Now, back to the show.
Welcome back to our program. Today we are talking with Bert Keeter, fashion designer and Project Runway contestant. Bert, you've worked for fashion designers Holly Harp, Bill Blass, Halston, and Arnold Scassi, certainly legends all in their own right. Could you just fill us in a little bit about your experiences with each of these designers and dish a little dirt for us in good taste? Thank you.
Thank you, Anne. Well, as I mentioned earlier, Holly Harp was my first job out of college when I left Parsons, and she was a wonderful first job to have. She was very inspirational. Holly, I remember once we were fitting something, and it was the sleeve on the on a dress or a jacket, and it was she liked the way it looked. It wasn't anywhere, the shoulder seam wasn't where that generally was, and she said, "You know why? Why does the shoulder seam always have to be right on the shoulder? Let's put it down here." She loved to break rules, and to I remember when she had an amazing group of matte jersey gowns that she did, and she actually used an acetylene torch to burn the edges. And it happened by accident one day. I think something burned, and she liked the way the matte jersey oxidized. So she did this amazing collection of matte jersey dresses with the edges burned off, and they were just beautiful. She was great, and actually the first time I went to New York with her, we were showing our collection at the Plaza Hotel, and one morning we were reading Women's Wear Daily, and they were talking about the collections in Paris and the collections in Milan and the fashion scene in Europe, and she's at the spur of a moment, she just decided, she said, "Bert, we're going to Europe." So there we were in New York. We flew off to Europe for 2 weeks. We were in Paris, Rome, Milan, and Florence, and it was just an amazing experience with her. She was definitely one of the most the talented designers of that period. She did high fashion, but she did it in a very modern, sort of free-form way. Unfortunately, she's no longer with us. Yeah. She died very suddenly of ovarian cancer about 12 years ago. But a very, very talented woman, and she was a great experience to have as your first designer. In Los Angeles at that period, there really wasn't a lot of high fashion. It was like Levi's or jeans and very, very low-end sportswear, high volume. And as far as her, there was Holly Harp, James Kalanos, Jean-Louis, a few of the, they were definitely more of the established American designers who you'd find in Los Angeles.
How about some of your experiences with Bill Blass?
Well, Bill Blass, that was amazing too. That was like, for me, it was like being in a movie. His offices were at 550 7th Avenue, which at that time was the epitome of the best in New York. We had Jeffrey Bean, Oscar de la Renta, Pauline Trigere, Adolfo. Everybody was in this building, and just riding the elevator every morning was an experience.
Oh, my goodness.
And he was very, very friendly person to work with, very social. You'd have amazing people would just drop by the salon to visit, to fit, Diana Vreeland.
Vreeland, the editor of Vogue, famous Diana Vreeland, right?
Yes. The people you would meet on a day-to-day basis, Nancy Kissinger, Elizabeth Taylor, people like that would just pop in. It was just great. But I loved his style. He was very American, but he certainly was influenced, I would think, by probably Dior, Christian Dior, I think. And the French designers, I think, did influence him. But he translated it in a very American way. He would do a beautiful evening gown. The bodice or the jacket would be out of like a Donegal tweed, and then he'd combine it with like a very luxurious, fuchsia pink satin ball gown, and it was just very like tongue in cheek use of fabrics and color. He was amazing.
Did you like working for Halston?
Well, Halston was a very strange sort of situation. I was there 5 years. I only met Halston himself once. He was sort of out of the business at that time for certain reasons, but it was certainly an experience. We were in the Olympic Tower on the 21st floor. The salon room was almost a half a block long. It was two stories high, the ceilings with walls of glass and mirrors, and it was just blood red ox Chinese carpet, orchids all over the place. And we had an amazing workroom. We had the Halston's original tailor, draper, cutters, sewers, finishers. But at that time, the only clothes that we were designing, which I was hired to do, was to design for JCPenney, Halston three line for JCPenney, which was not really what I was interested in. But it was an amazing opportunity to work for that company. And that's when I got to travel to Asia and also to Europe. We would go to Europe twice a year, but to the Orient four times a year. And that was really eye-opening to work in that type of production where I remember once sitting having lunch with the buyer from JCPenney, and she was complaining that a dress cost too much. And I looked at her in dismay, and I told her, I said, you know, I don't understand. She said, I have socks that cost more than this dress. You know, they were cashmere socks, but still, to me, it seemed like a bargain they were getting this dress for. It's $59 or something back in 1988 or something. So it was interesting, and it was very successful. I did a great job designing for that market. Towards the middle of my stay at Halston, I was there 5 years, I did convince the CEO to let me start designing couture. We had, like I mentioned, this amazing group of talented tailors and sewers and drapers and pattern makers. Plus, we had a workroom filled with couture fabrics from Halston. And I did dress some of the most important socialites in New York at that time, Carol Petrie, Jan Cowell, she's an amazing art collector. I did the wedding, did a beautiful gown for Patti LuPone when she was up for a Tony nomination, designed her wedding gown when she was married on stage at Lincoln Center. We were trying to relaunch the Halston made to order. I just don't think it was the right time. There were a lot of things out of our circumstances. Halston himself was very ill.
Yeah.
It was just about a year and a half away before he passed away himself. But it was an amazing experience. You know, I'll never forget being in the Olympic Tower and having that atmosphere around me.
Oh, that is so amazing. And this is one of the reasons why I admired you so much on Project Runways, because you have seen so much and you have worked with all of these people. And I think that brought so much to your work. And I'm so glad that the world got to see you.
Thank you.
And lastly, Arnold Scassi, how is it to work for him, or any ideas that you have about what you learned from him?
Well, I actually worked for him before I worked for Halston, and then I worked for him briefly after Halston. What he designed was there was no way around it. It was just beautiful and very striking. He had the creme de la creme of New York's and American society would come there twice a year to have their to select their gowns for their upcoming social event of the season. I remember Mrs. William Randolph Astor. She was the head of the Girl Scout ball committee, mm-hmm. And they would have a big ball every year at the Waldorf Astoria or something, and she would come in. Brooke Astor would come in. Mrs. Barbara Bush would come in for fittings. And his clothes were really spectacular. They were really, they were event dressing at its best. And he was basically trained and influenced by Charles James, which was a very early American couturier in the 40s and 50s. Scassi's had an amazing use of color. He would combine like a chartreuse with a purple and a pink, and it would just somehow work, or its proportions, and very, very opulent and glamorous looks.
Now, how does one get to be connected with a famous designer? How would one approach a Bert Keeter and say, I'd like you to design for me? How did the Betsy Bloomingdale's and the Barbara Bush's come to the famous designers and have designs done for them?
Well, Mr. Scassi had been, when I worked for him, he had been in business for many, many years. And I think then, in that period, it was more the norm for a woman to take time to really create a wardrobe for a season. I think nowadays, many women and many women and men, they really don't take that much time in selecting, finding the best thing for them to wear.
Mm-hmm.
But in that period, it was, society was a little more closed than it is now.
Mm-hmm.
When you were invited to a particular function, like Truman Capote's black and white ball. I mean, that was the women spent months trying to decide what they were going to wear to that. I think women put more emphasis on that. I'm not saying it's more important than other things, but it was very, very important to be well-dressed and to be dressed properly. And he had a following just like Bill Blass and Halston. They were all very different, but the women that they dressed were looking beautiful and looking well-dressed was very, very important to their social connections and standing.
Did you get to dress anybody for the black and white ball?
No, that was before my time. That was in the 60s. But it was an amazing event, I remember, you know.
Is there any other designer that you would have liked to have worked for?
Well, another American designer that I do admire, but he was before my time, was Norman Norell.
Oh, the best.
Incredible. Bill Blass was very influenced by Norell also. He probably was the first person that would do something as what we see as modern today, as combining a gold sequined sleeveless dress underneath a camel duffel coat and making it into a very sexy sort of tailored sporty evening ensemble. Nowadays you'll see Donna Karan or Marc Jacobs or whoever doing that combination of doing a very sporty fabric with something that's considered very evening and glamorous, putting wool or cashmere with sequins.
Oh, yes. I
really admired Norell a lot. My first trip to Paris, when I went with Holly Harp, one night we were out for dinner and we were leaving a restaurant, Club Set, and I was ahead of Holly. She was talking to some other people at the restaurant, and I pushed back the curtain. It was in the winter, and in Europe, in Paris, they have curtains in front of the doors to keep the draft out. And when I pushed back this heavy curtain, I'm standing in the corner of this little cubicle with Yves Saint Laurent with his arms crossed, looking at the floor. He was a very shy man, and for me, that was like seeing God.
Oh, yes.
Just standing within 3 feet of me. He was, I think, at that period, my idol above any of them. It was Yves Saint Laurent. I loved the way he dressed women in the 60s and 70s and the 80s, put women in pants. We take it for granted, but he was really the first European designer that felt women look fabulous in pants, whether it was day or evening. That for me was a God shot.
Oh, Bert, these are wonderful stories, and we're going to hear more. Please stay tuned for more Dishing the Dirt on Design.
Now you don't have to stay linked to your desktop or laptop. Take Voice America on the go and listen anywhere. Get our mobile app for iPhone, BlackBerry, or Android at the Apple iTunes App Store, BlackBerry App World, or Android Market.
Do you find yourself tearing pictures of rooms out of magazines? Do you watch certain movies and TV programs because of the homes they show? Are Sundays reserved for open houses? Then you are a home dreamer. And someday, you will build or renovate your dream home. Steve Klipp has spent 3 decades learning how to win at the dream home game. His show, Winning the Dream Home Race, can be heard every Thursday at 8 p.m. Eastern Time, 5 p.m. Pacific Time on the Voice America Variety Channel. Let Steve Klipp help save you money and make you a winner.
Have you ever wanted to ask a direct question to a private investigator? If so, you'll want to listen for the Private Eye Nightline with private investigator John Ciaccio. John and his guest experts will answer your questions about infidelity, drug issues, custody, restraining orders, and more. Sometimes there are sensitive issues involving a family member or other loved one. We're here to help. The Private Eye Nightline is broadcast live every Friday at 10 a.m. Eastern Time, 7 a.m. Pacific Time on the Voice America Variety Channel.
The Internet's number one talk station. Number one talk station. VoiceAmerica.com.
You are tuned in to Dishing the Dirt on Design with Ann Asher and Eleanor Schrader Schapa. For more information about our program, please visit dishingthedirtondesign.com. Now, back to the show.
Today we're talking with Bert Keeter on fashion design. Bert, I know that our listeners are eagerly awaiting your comments on what it was like being on Season 9 of Project Runway. And I must add that one of the best quotes from the show was when Tim Gunn said, "Bert knows how to make clothes like angels have swept down." So tell us a little bit more about your experiences.
Project Runway overall was an amazing experience in many, many different levels. The very first challenge, which was Come As You Are, where Tim Gunn walks into our apartments at like 4 o'clock in the morning, knocks on the door, walks in, and instructs us all to get not to get dressed, just to grab a sheet off the bed and come with him. So here we are walking through Times Square at like 5 o'clock in the morning, 16 of us wrapped in sheets and in our pajamas, or myself, I was in a pair of boxer shorts and a t-shirt. We arrive at Parsons, where we're instructed to change into sort of scrubs you would have in an operating room. And our first challenge is to design something out of what we slept in. So I started the challenge, and about an hour into it, maybe not even an hour, I just had this overwhelming fear come over me, and I thought, I just can't do this. And I was very close to walking up to the producer and saying, you know, I want out. I don't want to be involved in this. But fortunately I didn't. I just kept doing what I had needed to do, which was cut my shorts open, make iron the t-shirt, make something out of it. And that feeling of fear eventually quickly left me, actually, once I became productive doing the next thing I needed to do. And as it turned out, that was the first challenge of the show, and I won that challenge. I had an amazing dress that I made. All the judges, Heidi, Michael Kors, Nina Garcia, they all loved it. It was great. And it was a great experience, that one challenge. And I enjoyed the whole show. Was amazing.
Oh, I'm so glad to hear that, because you were such a gentleman on the show. And tell us about some of the odder challenges that you had.
I think for me, I think what I found frustrating was that the way the challenge is described to you, and the way some of the judges would judge the winner or loser on the challenge, didn't seem to be cohesive. Mm-hmm. I think that was one. But definitely the challenges that were most challenging were the team challenges.
Yes.
I did have a little trouble, or they had a little trouble. I guess everyone had a little trouble working together as a team sometimes. Some of the personalities, they just didn't want to seem to work as a team. It was more like, I'm the leader, not me, but I'm leading this, and you do what I tell you to do. So that wasn't very pleasant, but what's great about each of those challenges, it was awkward. I came out on top in the challenge regarding the team that I worked with.
Good. Absolutely.
Very good.
So to my point of view, I stuck to my guns, and
yes,
I did what I thought was best for the team and for my design, and I believe I generally got kudos for that from the judges.
Absolutely, because as I mentioned, you've been around for so long and you have had such great experiences in the fashion design field, and I think that's important for the younger generation to understand, to learn from those who have been around.
Well, right. Well, also, I love history, and I love,
yes,
you know, not ancient history, but just, you know, the, like, one challenge with one of the designers, he said, well, let's do something about with Mae West and put her in pants and a blouse. And I said,
no.
Mae West never wore pants in her,
yes,
entire life. There's one picture of her in her movie career wearing pants, and that's when she played a lion tamer. And the same person said, well, let's do something really sexy, you know, Queen Victoria dress off of her and her bust pushed up and jewels.
Oh.
And I'm thinking, sexy and Queen Victoria do not go together in the same sentence. And he was confusing Queen Victoria with Queen Elizabeth I.
Yes.
It's like, so come on, I'll do what you want, but please describe what you want. So, you know, that was the challenge.
How did you learn so much history?
Like I said, I just love to look. I love to read. I'm always, one of my hopes is to move to Italy in a few years, and one of the main reasons I want to live in Italy is just so I can study ancient history and the arts and literature and painting and sculpture and mosaics. Not study it like a professor or a student, but just sort of like live around it, go through it, see it, be aware of my surroundings, and mm-hmm. just take advantage of being in a beautiful historic country like that.
Yes.
Bert, you have such a wonderful background. And you know how to make a woman look like a woman, show her femininity, and make her look elegant and beautiful. What are some of the clues and techniques you use to achieve that look?
My design sense is very simple. Is not really the right word, but it's uncontrived. I don't like things that are contrived, and I think sometimes there's too much. It's almost like a lot of designers nowadays have attention deficit. They just can't leave well enough alone. They have to keep adding and adding and adding. And you know, you'll see a designer, he'll do this extravagant show where he makes women look like they're going to a fantasy cocktail or just some sort of circus. And then at the end of the show, he walks out on the runway wearing a white shirt and a pair of black pants and black shoes. So I think put your money where your mouth is. If you're going to design costumes for women, you need to support it by coming out on the runway in a costume. But so I always feel that if a woman's going to invest her money and time into buying and wearing a dress, I want her to be able to wear it more than once and feel as good as she did the first time in it, not feel like, why am I wearing this dress that has goat fur on the back of it? You know, it may have
and
worked.
A tail.
Yes, it might have worked last week when I went to that party, but I can't really wear it again because it's so specific, and it's like, I'm not really sure this is the right look for me, and it looks good from the front, but from the back or the side, you know, or a woman's packing to go on a trip to Europe or to somewhere where she wants to take one great dress with her or one great look that she can wear maybe to a dinner, maybe to the theater, but wear it more than once or twice and change it up or dress it up or down with an accessory or scarf, you know, black dress with black shoes or a black dress with a beaded sandal. Can just give it where the dress isn't dictating where it can be worn and how it can be worn. So that's sort of how I look at designing for a woman.
Should we all be afraid walking across the street in front of your car? Do you dish us?
No. Actually, I've in the last few years, and I think being on Project Runway has helped me too, I've just decided that people should do what they want to do. I mean, I don't think there's any right or wrong way to dress, but you have to be held accountable sort of for it. And I just, you know, but, you know, buying clothes, it's a huge investment financially and just time-wise. And I think the women I do want to dress are very busy. They're very successful. They lead very full lives, and they don't want to buy something that they're going to not get a lot of wear out of. It's not so much just about the money, but also how much closet space. I mean, how many things do you want to take on vacation with you, or how many things do you want to take on a business trip that you have to take? You know, this is a modern world we live in. I think we should dress with a modern angle to the way our wardrobes are built.
Speaking about the modern world, this world now has so many women, more than half of women working. Mm-hmm. How would you dress a woman or give a woman advice who is in the business world how to dress? It certainly is different from the way it was a long time ago.
Right. A company that I really admired a lot was Linda Allen for Ellen Tracy.
Yes.
She had a formula that worked for she was designing, I think, for 40 years, and it was the same formula for all that time. I think, and I've dressed women, I know women that are very successful in business. They deal with men in business suits. They're very powerful men, you know, and, they want to go when they go into a business meeting with Warren Buffett or somebody. Mm-hmm. They want to look professional. They don't want to look overly masculine, but they don't want to look flirty. They want to feel on an even keel with that man sitting across the conference table from them. So they want to look appropriate. And they also, like I said earlier, are traveling. They'll be in Chicago one day, in New York the next day, maybe in Europe for a week for board meetings. And they don't want to take five suitcases with them. They really don't have the patience for all that. So they want a wardrobe that's very streamlined and very functional and that they just don't have to put a lot of – they want to look fabulous. I mean, they definitely want – they're still women and they want to look great. But if you can design a beautiful dress that's interesting but simple, it can go from a board meeting back to the hotel. You change your shoes. You take off the fitted blazer. You put on a lace cardigan or just a beautiful, you know, evening cover up, and you change your earrings and you're out the door and you're going to dinner in the same dress you had on.
You know, I love that. I can't wait to see your new clothes because that's my life and that's what I look for and have such a hard time finding.
Ann and I are going to be right over to your house now, Bert.
Right.
what they've just shown in Europe were the resort collections. And I think of resort as you're going to a, you know, some place where you want to be casual and, you know, you don't want to work a lot with your clothes. And there was one designer, I won't mention his name because he's very successful and he could have me rubbed off the face of the earth, but you would need a suitcase just for one pair of pants that he designed. You know, it's just, and that's something else I have a beef with. I think a lot of these very successful established houses, they're not really selling fashion anymore, like clothing. they're selling an image, which is wonderful for the magazine editors that will get someone to buy their magazines. But what these houses are really selling are sunglasses, our scarves, our jewelry, our fragrance, is makeup. The clothes are just, they're almost like being smug about what they're putting on the runway.
And Bert, we want to hear more about that. We're going to take a short break, and then we'd like you to continue that thought.
Think you've seen everything there is to see in online television? Let us surprise you. Visit voiceamerica.tv today for sports, health, business, and more on demand 24/7.
Are you lost, fed up, knowing you're better, and yet not knowing why? Let Derek O'Neill transform the not knowing into the knowing by showing you the way. Whether it's not being able to drop the excess weight to unhealthy relationships or finances that you know you deserve, Derek provides insights that are like magnets to invite what you want in your life and repel what you don't want. Tune in to Derek now to discover how to improve your life immediately and unleash the winner that you know you are and others need to see. Listen Mondays at 9 a.m. Pacific Time on Voice America Variety.
What does a visual workplace mean to you? How does it contribute to operational excellence? And what steps do you take to put it powerfully in place? Listen to The Visual Workplace, Work That Makes Sense, to find out. Each week, Dr. Gwendolyn Galsworth, visual workplace expert and award-winning author, shares tools and strategies to help you make the workplace to speak at a glance, without saying a word. Learn to work safer, faster, better, and at far less cost, no matter what business you're in. Tune in to The Visual Workplace every Tuesday at 4 p.m. Pacific, 7 p.m. Eastern on Voice America Business.
Stimulating talk
gets those synapses in your brain firing really fast.
All the time.
The number one internet talk station where your opinion counts. VoiceAmerica.com.
You are tuned in to Dishing the Dirt on Design with Ann Asher and Eleanor Schrader Schapa. For more information about our program, please visit dishingthedirtondesign.com. Now, back to the show.
Welcome back to Dishing the Dirt on Design with Ann Asher and Eleanor Schrader Schapa. Our guest today is fashion designer Bert Keeter from Project Runway. Before the break, we were talking about branding, and you had some excellent things to say, and I know that you have a lot more to say, Bert, about branding, because branding is really what everything is about today in fashion, in business, in entertainment, you name it. It's in everything. So would you please pick up on the branding for us and tell us what is going on in the world of branding as it applies to fashion?
Thank you. I think, well, branding is very important. It's certainly designer identity. But I feel for myself, I would never want to do a runway show or create a garment for an editorial that I really didn't intend to be worn and by exactly the way it's shown on the runway or in the editorial. I think so many designers nowadays, they're sort of smug about what they put on the runway, knowing that this will never translate to the street. But they're making a killing by creating this image, fantasy or whatever you have. It draws, I think, sort of an uneducated customer to buy their branded items, their handbags, their shoes, their eyeglasses, their fragrance, their makeup. I don't ever want to put anything, like I just mentioned, on the runway that I really don't intend a woman to wear.
Yeah.
Fairly much the way I've designed it. But it's almost like, I think it's overkill. I think the clothes should really stand for the, I think so many of these designers, if they weren't able to do the branding, the licensing, they'd be out of business in a minute.
Yeah.
And I'm talking about some very, very big designers. They're not making the money on their clothes. They're making it on their licenses.
Mm-hmm. But Bert, isn't that one of the ways that they get the attention from the media? And the media is what gets everything out to us, the people, because we don't all go to see these shows. We get our information through the media and the fashion magazines and what's on television and things like that. It seems to me that the media is more to blame for this, because I see it in the design world too. Outlandish
exactly.
Gets the attention.
Mm-hmm.
Really good design, it's so what?
Well, that's, I think, the problem too. I mean, who are these people that are selecting making the covers of magazines or selecting the editorials? What is their pedigree as far as are they qualified for doing this? I don't know. But I think there is a fine line. There's certainly beautiful ways to show clothes in magazines. You could have a simple, it's all about building the story. But the actual clothes themselves, I think they're just overworked and over-designed. And I don't think that if you're going to, I mean, it's so easy nowadays to walk into a store and see something that's $1,000 at beginning, you know, up to many, many thousands. And I just don't see that being valid when something is so contrived and so like you can really just wear this for a few times and then you're not going to want to put it on again. But one of the designers that I really admire the most is Albert Kremler. Mm. He designs a line named Acris. It's manufactured and sold in Switzerland. And his clothes are exquisite. They're beautifully made. They're very flattering. They're very expensive, but you can get a lot of mileage out of them. As opposed to some other designers, just as expensive, just as whatever. But I guess it's just a different customer, really, that someone that needs that sort of has the confidence not to feel like that they're going to walk in the room and people are going to turn around and stare at them, but just wants to be in the room and wants to go about their life and not be like, you know, please, please, please look at me. I think a lot of the designers are just screaming, "They're please, please, please look at me," where the type of woman I want to design for is very confident and doesn't want to be like that. Not that she's a shrinking violet, but she's just understated and quiet and sophisticated without all the bells and whistles.
And consequently, that woman is elegant.
Yes.
Now, when you talk about Acris, you're talking about not only beautiful, handsome style and design, but more than anything else, they are one of the few companies left still using exquisitely fine fabrics. Mm-hmm. And we haven't addressed this yet today, but this is a very important development that's happened in the fashion world, where the quality of the workmanship has gone south and the fabrics have gone way far south. So much so that your better lines are using what used to be used in fabrics in the junk lines. Mm-hmm. Could you please speak about that?
Well, there are a lot of designers that develop their own fabrics. They use a lot of synthetic fabrics because they think that's cutting edge or whatever. I still love wool, silk, cashmere, cotton, things like that. It's just, I don't know. Not only manufacturing of garments, but manufacturing of the fabrics and the trims have gone overseas to Asia. Mm-hmm. And Europe has been decimated. All of the fabulous silk houses in Lyon and France have basically gone out of business. They could not compete with the labor that's in China. They can't compete with it's just no way. And I think that's also part of the fault is should lie on the consumer. When they make these choices to buy something, a cashmere sweater that's $17 at retail from a worldwide vendor, they're putting out of business the small company that wants to do a quality cashmere full fashion sweater, maybe made in Scotland or in Italy or something. They can't compete with that. So it's like this is what's happened. I think, especially in America, that the consumer wants so much. They want. And they're buying these things at such ridiculous prices. If a woman said, there's a commercial out where a woman is bragging that she bought a dress for $200 and her friend says, well, I bought the same dress someplace else and it only cost me $40 and I bought this and this and this and this and it all came to $200. It's like, how do you do that?
Well, you know, there are many different markets, and that's fine for the mass market. But what I'm talking about is where the upper echelon markets have been decimated.
Mm-hmm. Well, again, it's. I think it still goes back, though, that people want more.
Yes,
they're
you're right.
They're not satisfied with just a few good things in their closet. They want more and more and more, and that's not the answer. I think it's less and less and less, just the best things, the most beautiful things, the great quality, the great fit. That's something else that kills me today is you'll see a woman on a red carpet or on the news or in a magazine, and she's wearing something that doesn't fit her properly.
That's true.
Bert, if it only would fit properly.
I know we're running short of time, and it's very important that you answer this for us. And that is, you are going to be doing a blog in the coming season for Project Runway. and that's season 10.
And would we also want to hear about what you're designing now.
That's right. Okay. So can you talk to those two points for us, please?
Certainly. I'm very happy to be blogging for Project Runway for season 10. One thing I'm known for is a sharp wit, and also my knowledge of construction and fabrics and the whole way of building a garment. So I'm looking forward to that very much. I really admire Heidi and Michael and Nina on this show. The designers up on the stage really should listen to what they're saying to them. I think sometimes they discredit them too easily. But I'm very excited about that. I'm very grateful to Lifetime for giving me that opportunity. And I am actually right now working on my spring 2013 collection,
great,
which I'm showing in New York in September to a very, very good retailer. And hopefully they'll pick me up. It's only one store, and that's all I want to sell to right now. And they're going to be very, very – they're very red carpet, very event-orientated.
Well, we wish you a lot of good luck with that. It sounds wonderful. Just wonderful. Thank you so much for coming and talking to us today.
My pleasure. Thank you.
Thank you. To our wonderful audience, we give you a great big thanks for listening to our broadcast. Tune in next time so that we can tantalize you with more Dishing the Dirt on Design. I'm Ann Asher, signing off.
And this is Eleanor Schrader Schapa, and next time you see me, I will be dressed by Bert Keeter. Thank you.
Thank you again for listening this week. Ann Asher and Eleanor Schrader Schapa will be back next Wednesday at 7 p.m. Eastern Time, 4 p.m. Pacific Time, for another edition of Dishing the Dirt on Design on the Voice America Variety Channel. Have a great week.
Thanks again for listening to the preceding program brought to you on the Voice America Variety Channel. For more information about our network and to check out additional show hosts and topics of interest, please visit voiceamericavariety.com. The Voice America Talk Radio Network is the worldwide leader in live internet talk radio. Visit voiceamerica.com. The views and ideas expressed on the preceding program are strictly those of the host or guests and do not necessarily reflect the views and ideas held by the Voice America Talk Radio Network, its staff, and management.